Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken Edwards with the NCL, sitting to my right, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken.
And Phil Davidson with the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Sunday morning?
Yeah.
Brackets still going?
No.
Meh. Yeah. I gave up on that a long time ago.
Dead after first game.
No, yeah. Listen.
I had McNeese State going all the way through.
I'm on my way back.
Are you?
No, I don't get it.
I'm planning for next year.
You know, I'm in so many pools that, like, every once in a blue moon, like, I'll just get someone like, hey, you know, you won that one. I'm like, oh, cool.
Do you do square pools as well?
I have not.
Those are fun.
Yeah, those are a little easier.
Unlike football, where there's numbers that are bad. Like,
right.
That's a good point. In basketball.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
I should have. So, anyway, we have double Pat. Pat Kelly, who is the president business manager of Local 399 of the Operating Engineers, and they are the stationary engineers, and they're here to talk about, A, what they do for a living, who they are, et cetera, and then, B, a fight that they're having, a really interesting fight. And then Pat O'Gorman is one of their business agents and organizers, et cetera. So he's here as well. So both of them are here. We'll spend some time with them.
Pat is also a board member.
Pat Kelly is a board member of the National Coalition of Labor. Yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I was just at his general membership meeting, and it was packed. I mean, it was absolutely packed. It was a blast.
At their hall,
yeah.
And the fight they're having that they'll get into, it really plays into a lot of the things that we talk about with the sort of manipulation of the labor board.
This is the real life version.
This is what happened.
Yeah, this is an actual example of, now it's not just hypothetical, but they're going to talk about an actual live. People's lives, people's livelihoods on the line based upon these, you know, insane newish arguments that were first started by the Teslas and the Chipotles and the Amazons, how the National Labor Relations Board, not ACT, but board, is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And so right now, you know, you'll hear it's interesting. So what else we got, Ed?
I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff. The NLRB has, you know, finally installed their new general counsel. It's been appointed. And, yeah, she's a partner. Her name's Crystal Carey. She's a partner with Morgan Lewis.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You know what? Obviously, the crowd does not like that.
Crystal Carey.
It is an interesting name. She's got a past, representing companies like Dollar General when they've been... I'll just wait till the crowd is finished. No, I mean, Dollar General.
Hey, I feel like we're at a Republican town hall.
Oh, hey,
nicely done.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, we reported a long time ago, maybe 6 months ago, about how Dollar General was declared to be the worst retail job in America, because, like, if there's a light bulb out, they won't change it until there's more light bulbs out. But
have you ever gone into a Dollar General and seen a happy employee?
No.
Not once.
I haven't spent a lot of time over there, but yeah. I could surmise that you're not going to see many.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, as you're driving through God's creation, there's a lot of towns that are nothing more than a Casey's gas station and a Dollar General anymore.
It's crazy.
You know, I noticed that more and more and more.
You think it's going to be $1.30 General now with the tariffs, or $1.50 General with the tariffs?
That's a good question. I know Dollar Tree is like $1.25.
They're not immune from inflation, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So she represented them.
She represented them in some of these cases where workers were getting sick because, like, there was a hole in the roof and rain was coming in and creating mold, and workers were getting sick, and she defended the company. She's, you know, sort of well known. She served, I think, as a clerk for the NLRB starting in like 2009, maybe.
Is that right?
Yeah. So she has a little bit of a history there, but you know, her bent is definitely very much anti-union. So
pro management,
right?
Came from a big union busing firm.
That's for sure. Yeah. So we can count on the NLRB being a lot less welcoming to people who want to join a union.
What happens though? Like, let me ask you this:
they're already dysfunctional.
But
so,
first of all, they're relatively useless.
Yeah.
All right. And what happens if the NLRB, meaning her agency, is actually declared unconstitutional? Does that mean she doesn't have a job?
I'm not sure.
She'd be really happy, I'm sure.
She'll be the Linda McMahon of the NLRB. Get in here and destroy it.
Yeah, I hereby declare. I don't understand why Trump just doesn't, like, he just declared the Department of Education null and void. Like, why don't you just declare this thing null and void?
Oh, I'm sure it's coming.
Well, he can't actually do the Department of
Education. I know
this.
He can't do a lot of the stuff he's doing.
They've said that they're going to keep it open to administer Pell Grants because they finally realize that you can't dissolve a department without congressional approval, and Congress won't support that.
Well, are you sure about that?
I am.
Really?
I also,
the House Republicans are going to buck Trump on this one?
They're keeping it open because there's nowhere else to administer these student loans, and they don't want to be seen as, like, you know, destroying all of the college students. Mm. So we appreciate that.
I told my son to stop paying his loans immediately.
Yeah.
Great advice, Dad.
Of course, they're going to keep that part open, too. Like, they're going to collect their money.
There's money to be collected. Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
More juice coming, too, I'm sure.
But once again, you know, look, it's we go back to this, and it is the workers' mic. There are thousands and thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of worker bees that are being put out on the street, you know, and on a daily basis. And like you said, Ed, earlier, you know, these judges keep overturning it, right? They keep coming back. Okay, we got to rehire 20,000 people. And what do? They're rehiring them. And what
They rehired them to put them on administrative leave.
Paid administrative leave.
Right. So instead of paying people to work, taxpayers are paying people to stay home.
So how is that not
this is a failed
abuse?
It's just a failed experiment. You know, like there are rules and you can't just fire people for nothing. And when these people get brought back, you're paying them because you're not going to get their security clearances again. You're not going to reissue computers. Like, that's the problem that these departments are saying is, like, you have to onboard all these folks again. And, of course, the leadership's not looking to do that. So they're just paying to put them on administrative leave where they'll remain, I guess, until they can be
fired.
Who knows?
Or
who knows?
Actually rehired, or the masses rise up and say, "What the heck is this?
Well, this
country, where's this country going?"
I mean, this kind of goes along the lines of like when a person comes in as like a CEO say and just says, "I'm the boss. I can do whatever I want. I'm not going to observe all these stupid rules, all these stupid laws," and they, you know, fire a bunch of people. You wind up in court. You wind up having to like remedy all these things, and it costs you more in the long run. So it actually makes sense to understand the rules, the playing field, and approach, you know, efficiency in a smart, educated manner without a flamethrower. Because this isn't
nobody,
China.
There's nobody that's listening to this show that would not agree with the fact that getting rid of, you know, what they call waste, fraud, and abuse in the federal government is a good idea. I mean, everybody agrees with that.
Everyone's on
right?
board, yeah.
But as you said, Ed, let's get rid of the $500 hammer, not the person holding the $500 hammer, right?
Yeah.
And I want the expertise of the VA, the people that work at the VA. I want the expertise of people that can walk me through, you know, how to get a fill out a FAFSA form for my kid, you know, for whatever the government agencies are. Like, I literally want those people to be working there because they know what they're doing. And
they're experts.
And by the way, how much of this country relies on government services? A lot.
Well, and the choice that we're being given is fire park rangers and veterans or tax billionaires. And the government has chosen to fire the veterans and the park rangers and all these folks.
And you saw that they just rescinded the $15 minimum wage for federal contractors. So now, do you want someone working on a bridge making less than $15 an hour? Like, who are you finding?
Sounds like
work?
15's too much, Phil.
I mean, it depends how hard is he working.
Somebody's got to work watch the purse strings around.
I want experts. I mean, when we're talking about infrastructure,
For $15, or less than $15, you usually get really skilled labor.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, listen, we got to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Pat Kelly, Pat O'Gorman from IUOE Local 399 to talk about a bunch of really, really interesting stuff. We'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher here with Ken Edwards and Phil Davidson, and we are delighted to be joined in the studio today by Pat Kelly, the President Business Manager of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 399, and Pat O'Gorman, a business representative with Local 399.
Welcome, guys.
Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Double Pat.
Yeah, there's two pets.
Two pets.
It's like too many pets.
I don't want to take that, Ken. Let's just keep it clean.
Okay. Okay. You have no idea what you're in for, Pat Kelly.
He does, of course. The problem is he does.
I can run out of the room real quick.
Yeah, Pat Kelly, also a board member on the National Coalition of Labor.
Absolutely. Founding member, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Our boss.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start with this. The operating engineers are an interesting union in that we have different sectors, but there's a pretty big divide between construction and what are called stationary.
Right.
And you're on the stationary side.
Right. We're on the stationary side.
Explain that.
So Local 399 is part of the International Union of Operating Engineers.
Yep.
There's two sides of the house. There's the heavy machinery operators, and that's in Chicagoland, that's Local 150 represents them. And on the stationary side, that's Local 399.
Okay.
We represent people who operate and maintain facilities locally. We have over 10,400 members.
Wow.
You guys
have grown.
Yes, we have. We're at our all-time high right now.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Hopefully we can continue the growth with this new administration, where it's going to be a battle.
It's going to be a battle. That's okay. We'll take the battle.
So our members, you see our members in all type of facilities in the public and private sector.
So explain facilities. Like explain the word stationary, because I always like, what does that mean, stationary? It really means like you're in one place.
We're in one site. So you'll find our members in hospitals, hotels, commercial office buildings, data centers, casinos. Anything that's got four walls and an HVAC system, you'll find a Local 399 member.
Got it. And what do they do?
What they'll do is they operate and maintain the building systems, the heating, the cooling, so anything under the sun. It's like you're pretty much like the engineer in your house,
right?
That type of work that you do at home, you'll do in your building.
So it's interesting, right? Because people don't realize, especially like in a hospital, right? Or the building that we're sitting in right now, right? It's a massive, massive building. If you went downstairs, and I mean into the basement where all the equipment is, the equipment's massive in these buildings, right?
Right.
It's not an easy job.
No.
There's math, there's science, there's chemistry, correct?
Yeah. And we have a training program right now where we're affiliated with Triton College. We have over 1,900 seats filled this semester.
Wow.
Probably 2,000 seats available.
So wow.
We only have 100
that
didn't show up to class, so that's not too bad. We've been affiliated with them for years. We have an associate's degree program in facilities engineering technology.
Okay.
You know, when a person first comes in as a trainee, they're assigned a mentor business agent to sit down and talk to, and they give them the ins and outs on what to do to promote themselves from a trainee to an engineer to assistant chief to a facility manager.
So they're called station engineers, and the word engineer is not a misnomer.
No.
Because they're literally taking care of, you know, massive boiler systems, HVAC systems, things that if you don't know the math or science behind it, right, it's not like you just sit there and, you know, press a button and everything is fine.
No.
Like the building blows up. Right? It's like, it's that dangerous.
Right. There's a lot of life safety issues inside the building that our members are trained to not only keep the building environmentally safe, but also physically safe for the tenants.
Are you guys licensed?
Yeah. There's a City of Chicago license.
Gotcha.
There's a two-year process to achieve that. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much tied to our training program.
Yep. Makes sense.
So a person, when they come in again, they'll take classes to while they're working. And even before they're working, they have to become marketable, become a trainee. So we tell them to take 5-10 classes before we even send them on interviews for trainees.
Right.
Once a trainee job is open, they're on the job referral desk. They're sent on interviews. The employer hires them. And then from there, while they're working, they're still in school.
Yep.
Again, to take the classes to become more marketable, become an engineer after 2 years.
Got it.
Because after 2 years, they can take the City of Chicago license exam.
Yep.
And then get on the job referral desk to market themselves as an engineer.
Do your members, do they work for the buildings themselves typically, or do they work for a contractor?
It all depends on the industry. In the commercial office building industry and hotels, typically it's through a management company.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
There are some contractors also in the business that our members will be employed by. But in the hospital industry, in most university settings, they will be employed by the owner.
Got it.
So like we were talking to Unite here about their strike against Compass, the food service provider at Northwestern University, they've got a contract with Compass, whereas 399 has a contract directly with Northwestern.
Correct.
Okay.
So, Pat, do you have to go out and negotiate contracts with each and every single building, each and every employer, or their associations? Like, how does that work?
That all depends on the industry, again, on the commercial office industry. There's BOMA, Building Owners Management Association, which most of the buildings downtown and in the suburbs will follow those agreements. Mm-hmm. Hotel Association, the same thing.
Got it.
Most of the hotels in the Chicagoland area will follow that agreement.
Yep.
But every hospital, you know, most of the universities, they're all negotiated separately. Industry contracts, industrial contracts, all, you know, done separately.
So that's a decent amount of work then, huh?
Oh, we're constantly busy. The agents are running 24/7.
Yeah. And by the way, you guys run 24/7s, right?
Yes. Yeah, we're shift workers. So, yeah. Again, you'll see in most buildings a full crew of working 24/7.
So that's got to be hard on, like, so you're a business agent,
yeah.
Pat OG. I really like that. Pat OG. And you're here for a different reason, and we'll talk about that. But you're a business agent. I'm sure there are times where you need to work nights, weekends, mornings, days, right?
Like, yeah.
Like, talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, we have, you know, I started my career as an organizer. And you know, the goal as an organizer is to make it as easy as possible for someone to join your union, right?
Yeah.
So if they're going into work at 11 o'clock at night and they want to meet before work, you're meeting them at 10 o'clock at night.
I'm with you.
You know, it is what it is.
And then they get off at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you're there at 6 in the morning.
Yep.
Yep.
And, you know, if something happened to them and you know, it's...
And they need somebody.
It's your weekend, but, you know, they need somebody. You're not going to leave them out to dry for two days and wonder what their career is going to look like for 2 days when they haven't heard from you.
Good for you.
So it's, I mean, yeah, you get back to them as soon as possible if you didn't get the call at first. And, you know, it's, you got to be reliable.
So what is a stationary engineer basic wage here in Chicagoland?
Just under $50 an hour.
Wow.
Unless you're getting health insurance, pension. Wow.
Right on top of that.
Yeah.
And so you guys are different than construction, because if you guys get a job working for, you know, let's say a hospital, for example, that job is full-time.
It's a full-time job, yes.
Full-time gig.
Yeah, it's $20.80 a year.
Right, so they can't go like, I'm going to send you home for 10 hours or whatever, right?
Right.
At $50 an hour.
Yeah.
It's a great job.
That's a really good job. Yeah.
Well, wait a second.
This radio thing doesn't work out. Yeah.
But see, but Pat, people don't realize that, right? And so, you know, that guy's making $50 an hour
as
plus benefits, et cetera, year round. And so he doesn't have to worry about getting laid off, you know, in the wintertime or the whims of construction or the weather or things like that, right?
Right. Yeah, but we like to think of it as more of a career than a job.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because you can promote yourself up with the education. Again, I mentioned, you know, the associate's degree program with Triton College, but a lot of our members are getting to the point where they have the associate's degree and they want to go higher in the field. They want to be a facility manager.
So they jump like to different a different building, different companies?
They could.
Gotcha.
They could.
Okay.
But we have a 4-year degree program set up at IIT where a person can achieve that and they can become marketable to become a facility manager. And we had some of our members, you know, they're still members of the union. They're outside the bargaining unit. They can make up to $250,000.
Wow. Holy cow. So those are what? Like
Those are facility managers, operation managers. They could be over a portfolio of buildings, or even in a hospital setting, just be a director of operations over a hospital,
so,
a bigger hospital.
And they still hold their card?
Some do, yes.
Yeah. Why? In case they want to come back into the fold?
In case they want to come back and they understand where they came from.
Yep.
You know, the union provided their education.
Did both of you guys come from the field?
Yeah.
You did? Where'd you work, Pat OG?
I worked at a couple office buildings downtown, and then I spent some time at the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you?
I was a trainee, and then got called into the office, and 35 years later, here I am.
Are you serious?
Yep.
You've been on staff for 35 years?
Yep.
Holy cow. Wow, good for you. And you guys are, like, you know, like you said, you guys are growing, right? You're organizing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's our lifeblood, and we have to organize, right? Especially now.
Yeah.
And I know, like you said, it's going to be hard, right? But you'll talk about that in a second. We got to take a quick break, but we guys stick around because we want to talk about one particular organizing drive that you guys have going on right now, and a fight that you guys have going on right now. I want to make our listeners aware of it. So you stick around for a quick one more session?
Sure.
Sounds good.
Thanks. All right. Listen, we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic, right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, Phil, Pat, Thank you. Before we get into the meatier topic here, if somebody wants more information about how to join Local 399, what it's all about, where would they go?
They can go to our website, www.ioe399.org.
And your hall is in Chinatown.
We're in Pilsen.
It's Pilsen?
Yeah.
It's right on the cusp of Chinatown?
Yeah, right there, right across from Ozinga on the river.
Yep. Yeah, it's in a weird area. It's like set back. But yeah. It's a really nice building. It's
beautiful huge. Building. Yeah. And a lot of parking.
Yes, yeah, massive.
Lots of parking.
And you guys have a training site in there?
Yes.
You do training like in-house?
Oh, in-house. Yeah. So everything's in-house. We have, like I said, we have over 2,000 seats available a semester. Summer semester is a little lighter. It's about 1,200.
It's done there.
Yes.
It's done right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, if you ever get a chance, like drive by the building is beautiful. All right, so now let's pivot. Let's talk about why you guys are here. Pat OG, you want to start it off?
Yeah, we've got a pretty good fight going on right now with Advocate Health. We've had two organizing drives where we've won elections.
Okay.
One is at Good Samaritan Hospital, and one is at South Suburban Hospital. So what we have right now is we have two elections that haven't been certified yet. The election at Good Samaritan Hospital, we won 10-9. Mm-hmm. The employer challenged two ballots.
Okay.
So right now, those objections are in front of the National Labor Relations Board, which isn't
moving very fast at all.
It's full capacity dormant? At right. all, yeah.
What was the basis of the challenge, supervisor?
They're calling them supervisors. But now the funny thing they did, they know who the yes and the no are.
Of course.
Right? So they withdrew their objection to the guy they know is a no, who shares a lead title with the other guy who is also a lead, but they're not they're still objecting to him.
Funny how that
so,
works.
So, you know, if that's games. Not a play, yeah. And then South Suburban Hospital, which was the second election, mm-hmm. we won 11-5 with two objections there as well, the same two titles. They got to maintain their same line because they've got this, they're making this position over at Good Samaritan Hospital.
Right.
And their objections there, the first one was actually obviously written before Gwen Wilcox was put back on the National Labor Relations Board because their first said, objection is there's quorum. No quorum.
Yeah, right.
And they still submitted it, so I don't know if they didn't proofread that or what, but by the time they submitted it, we had a quorum on the board. The second they take the position, you know, pulled right out of Corporate Handbook 101 that the NLRA is not constitutional.
That is the argument of the day, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and literally it started with Chipotle and Tesla.
Yeah.
And SpaceX.
Right?
Amazon, Portillo's, yeah. I mean, Trader Joe's, everybody's yeah. kind right. of...
But I mean, when,
jumping on the bandwagon.
When a hot dog stand jumps on the bandwagon, yeah. now it's like, come on, man, you're a hot dog stand.
Well,
like
now, the thing that really bothers me is every corporation you just listed, none of them are a not-for-profit.
Right.
Yet Advocate Healthcare is supposed to be.
Is that right?
So that's what they file as.
How many hospitals do they own?
I believe it's... Well, see, that's... So they just bought a company in North Carolina.
Okay.
Atrium Health.
Okay.
So it used to be... It started as Advocate.
Right.
And then they bought Aurora, which was in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Then they bought Atrium, which now includes North Carolina, South Carolina, Alabama, and Georgia.
Hmm.
Yeah, so they're the largest health care provider in Illinois.
Yeah.
So they have 75,000 employees.
Wow.
So, Advocate's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
We've been trying to organize them for years. Other unions have as well.
Mm-hmm.
No one's been successful. As far as I know, we're the first union.
So this is the first election. This is the first breakthrough.
So yeah. we did have a contract with them years ago when they took over as a successor employer
uh-huh.
at the old Bethany Hospital
okay.
on the west side. Mm-hmm. And they were a decent employer. I was actually the agent there.
Okay.
You know, we had it for a few years. You know, they sold the hospital.
Right.
Moved along. But still, they've been anti-union, anti-worker from the get-go.
And they've got lawyers pushing these things. And all of that trickles down to cost for patients.
Oh, yeah.
When you're going in to see a doctor, you know, you're on your bill, it's you're funding these anti-union lawyers, anti-union campaigns.
So this is, and this is supposed to be not-for-profit?
And we make this argument all the time to what you just said. If you just took all the money you're paying your outside counsel right now and gave it to the bargaining unit, we'd all be done.
You said your second election was 11-5?
Yes.
And they have two objections. Let's say they win both of them. It's 9-7.
Well, so it's the challenges to the ballots aren't really what's holding it up. It's their objections filed after the election
that the NLRA
that are then
is
are supposed
valid.
To go to the NLRB, which I mean, we can't even get a hearing date for the election we won last year. So
really?
No, yeah. We have nothing yet.
So you've got a group of workers who clearly voted, no matter which way you slice it, which objections go which way, these workers voted to join a union.
Yes.
And the hospital is saying no, because nobody can make us.
Well, not only that, but they fired three of them, too.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we're fighting for their jobs back as well.
So in order to fight for their jobs back, because you don't have a contract yet, there's no grievance procedure, i.e. arbitration, you have to file
a ULP.
An unfair labor practice charge. And where does that go?
The National Labor Relations Board.
Okay, there we go. So we've come full circle. Yeah.
It's almost like they're gaming the system here.
Wait a second. Correct. What, Phil?
Seems like workers' recourse has been taken away entirely.
So an advocate, by the way, is used by some unions.
So many.
They are our largest visited healthcare system from our local, at least.
Wow.
I mean, if you broke down across, you know, the Carpenters Fund, the Operating Engineers Fund, so across the different locals, what those funds pay into Advocate for Care every year, that number would be humongous.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, not anymore. Here's the deal. I just canceled all of your contracts. How about that? I wrote an executive order, and I canceled all your contracts. Sorry,
Advocate. I think that works now. Yeah. You can do that now.
Yeah, I just did it.
I co-sign.
I just did it. Sorry. But yeah, I mean, that's a conundrum, right? It's like, look, it's like a pension fund being invested in Amazon.
Yeah.
You know for sure that there are union pension funds that own at least a mutual fund that has Amazon stock.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, what do? Do you divest yourself of it? You know, you have a fiduciary, blah, blah, blah. Like, so how do you, what do, Pat?
Well, that's the one of the things that we're trying to educate, you know, your audience and union members. You know, there's a couple of things we can do here that we're asking for help. First is, you know, we'd like for people to go to our website. There's a way you can communicate with the advocate executives, you know, through our letter campaign, and it will voice, you know, your audience's opinion on the anti-union behavior that these executives are showing.
What's the website again?
www.iuoe399.org.
Yeah, and I did it. It took 2 seconds to write the letter, and it went right to the CEOs.
Yeah, the second thing we can do as we're talking is, you know, follow the Samuel Gompers old quote, right?
Right.
You know, reward our friends and punish our enemies.
Yeah.
So if we can get people to be more aggressive and not patronize, you know, the advocate hospitals, that would send a message that the pro-worker people are paying attention to their dollars and not going to anti-union, anti-worker companies.
So when you say not patronize, are you talking about the actual patients, the members, our members themselves, that instead of going to an advocate facility, they're going to go to Northwestern?
Correct. Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So then that's a simple message, right? And I think it's one, like, you know, like, look what's happening at Target right now. Target's learning a hard lesson.
Big time.
They're taking a beating.
Yeah.
And Costco is going, come on over here, everybody. Yep.
We'll take you.
Right? And so that makes sense.
Right.
So you would think that some of your other hospital networks would say, like, you know, bring them over here. Welcome.
Right. There's plenty of providers in most union plans, right?
I mean,
you have your options.
Sure. Yeah. What else can we do? We call, like, pick up the phone?
We prank phone call?
Well, we are doing a bannering campaign.
Yeah, we have a bannering campaign going on where we've been out in front of the different advocate hospitals trying to educate the public, basically, on what's going on. You know, that's part of the reason why we're here, right?
So as a not-for-profit, right, in this world, do they have a board? Like, who sits on their board? Like,
they do have a board. We've contacted all their board members by mail and email.
Uh-huh.
Let them know what's going on. I mean, I think that it's just, you know, letting them know that, you know, you got a 2023, their CEO made $16.5 million.
Oof.
And, you know, that's not a good look when you're firing people who have, I mean, one of the guys they fired worked there for 20 years.
Why'd they fire these three guys?
They voted for
the union.
Yeah, that's why. They made up some.
Whoa.
I'm alleging.
Allegedly. Yeah.
That's my opinion.
No, what was their, like, stated
they
reason
came
for
up
firing?
They came up with an incident that they alleged happened over a year ago.
Okay. That involved all three?
No, that's just one example that I've given you.
Got it.
But the, you know, they just happened to wait till 3 days after we filed the petition to try to fire.
It's the old, we got to find a reason to fire this guy
right.
play.
Yeah.
And how many total employees are we talking about here?
So at Good Samaritan, we're talking, I think it's, and I'm off the top of my head, I believe it's 23. and South Suburban, I believe it's 19.
They're fighting tooth and nail over that.
So that means not everybody voted in the union election, correct?
Correct.
So people that were eligible, not everybody voted.
Correct.
And what do you think that is?
Well, I know one of the guys who got fired before the election didn't come to vote.
Got it.
But I some people are just scared. I mean, they're in there. Their boss is there every day telling them how terrible of an idea this is. Mm-hmm. And we can only meet them outside of work hours, right? So they've got them on the clock for 8 hours straight.
Oh, yeah.
And if they want to put them in a room and they want to tell them this is a terrible idea and we're a family and we can fix this amongst ourselves, they can. And
they do.
And they do.
Is that a
all
captive audience meeting?
Do they still, like, let me ask you this, like, because we had a change in the law here, right? No more captive audience meetings, or you can still have them, but you're not required to go.
Right.
Were they still holding those? Or was this before the law changed?
There's two things to that.
Yeah.
The Good Sam, Good Samaritan, was before the law changed.
How about Not So Good Samaritan?
Yeah.
Hey-o.
Bad Sam.
Bad Samaritan.
And then the South Suburban one, you know, when you do it one-on-one, it's hard to prove.
Sure.
And also, when you fire three people,
it's hard to get people to talk.
It's terrifying to be the one who comes forward and says, hey, yes, this is what they did. Because what makes it seem like you're not going to be number four?
Oh, God, yeah. And then, and look, by the way, what are they fighting for? Like, what do these guys want, right? Why did they decide to join the union?
They want a better wage. They want a say in their workplace.
That's it.
I mean, yeah.
Right?
And they're getting punished for that.
It's not that big of a deal.
No.
Right? Have a little bit of a say in your own career. And these, by the way, are stationary engineers, right, in your world, right? They're professionals. They're people that, like you said, one guy worked there for how many years?
A little over 20 years.
Okay. So it's not like they don't know what they're doing.
No.
Right? And the hospitals are running.
Yep.
Right. All the boilers are running. You know, everything is working.
Yeah.
And yet they're going to punish these people because they decide to join a union, so they're going to punish everybody.
Absolutely.
And so what's your next steps? Right. You're bannering. We're asking the public to get involved. You know, write some letters. You know, what else can we do to help?
Well, at this point, that's it. But every resource that we have, any type of idea that we have, we're throwing against the wall.
Yeah,
and we're going to do it because it's about taking care of these people. I mean, if we fail here and we cannot move the ball forward in this is going to affect the way we organize other sites. I mean, right now, particularly, we organize, you know, through the labor board.
Sure.
So that might shut this whole thing down on the way we organize.
Right.
We'll have to change the whole way how we do business.
Yeah, so you and I have talked about this, Pat. I mean, you know, organizing outside of the auspices of the National Labor Relations Board is something that, you know, the building trades do it quite often, right? It's a different animal because you can put economic pressure on a contractor and shut off his money supply. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to shut off the money supply of the largest, you know, network in the country.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or something that, you know, a company that's paying the CEO $60 million, you're not shutting off their money supply.
Right.
Right. You're not going to hurt them economically for 20-some-odd guys. So you have to think of different ways to do this and get at it.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Do you think that there are some wrongful termination lawsuits? Do you think that there's age discrimination? I mean, is there any of these type of things that might play into this thing? Right. You know, I've always felt like some of the best defenses get on the offense, right? Let's, you know, hey, you know, you're going to deny these workers the right to organize. You know, I'm going to sue you, and I'm going to find something that you did wrong because everybody did something wrong. And if the labor board, by the way, is unconstitutional, then guess what? Then you have to have the right to go into court,
right?
Right? Because organizing this is just my opinion, is a First Amendment right. If Janice said that, you know, union speech is First Amendment, which it did, that's mm-hmm. that's what the case said, then why isn't this same, you know, private sector union speech protected by the First Amendment? I have always thought strikes are protected by the First Amendment, you know? And now if there's no more National Labor Relations Board, then there's no mechanism to fix the problems. You have no choice but to go into court, you know, or self-help or whatever, right?
Right.
So you're right. I mean, you guys are in a conundrum, if you will.
Yeah, and I can tell you from what we hear at people at the other advocate hospitals, you know, we have people that we talk to at the other ones, they're already meeting with them, saying all the terrible things that could happen if we ever approach them.
They're getting in front of it, like, I mean, just in case Pat OG comes here, here's his picture.
He's going to try to raise your wages. Stay away.
He's going to try and give you a voice at work.
He seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, don't buy it. You know, have they on their own gone ahead and raised wages, done anything to help people, or is it just pure punishment and fear mongering?
No, there's, we've heard some, specifically a couple of the hospitals on the south side, that they've raised some of the wages there.
Okay.
Saying, hey, you know, we, the whole family approach again.
Yeah.
You know, we hear what you're saying. Here's a bone, and then we're not going to give you a raise for the next 3 years. We got to make that money up.
Right. We're just a small family company. We operate like a family in 14 states with $200 billion in annual revenue.
Exactly. Just mom and pop.
We're a $16 million CEO. Yeah.
We can't afford it.
Have they actually ever come out and said, like, we can't afford to pay you guys whatever the dollar amount is? Or
no, because we can't get them in a negotiation.
You can't even get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Ultimately, I think what we believe is they're afraid of us getting in. And then other unions will organize. Typically in the hospital industry, you know, we're the only ones that are organized. We have 40 hospitals in the Chicagoland area that are organized.
Got it.
So
how many of those have other, like the nurses, for example, are in there? Not a lot, right?
Not a lot. Not a lot.
Which, by the way, always surprises me. I always thought the nurses were in every nurses union.
No.
And it turns out I was wrong about that. Yeah. They're not.
Most aren't.
And I wonder why. I mean, is it the same thing? Like, you know, I don't know. But you guys are usually the first in, and yes. I know that, right? So literally, you know, and figuratively, from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you guys get in there. They're worried that the rest of the clerical staff, the nurses, you know, the janitors, et cetera, are going to go and organize.
Right.
And by the way, so what?
Yeah.
Right?
Because how terrible would that be for people to have a voice?
No, this is all about money. Yeah. Right? It's all about their bottom line, because healthcare in the United States is a for-profit business.
Yep.
If you take away that model, you don't have to worry about this. Right?
Right?
So, I don't know.
But if you pay people more, they can afford to go to the doctor, Ken.
and not go into debt.
Right, medical debt.
Yeah, that's good. One more time, the website.
It's www.iuoe399.org.
Okay. We'd encourage folks to go to that website, send a letter. It's super easy. I did it. It just takes 2 seconds. You know, click a couple of buttons. You can send a letter to the CEO or to the board?
It's, it goes to a couple C-level people. Yeah.
Yep.
And it auto-populates the email for you.
Perfect.
All you got to do is click send.
Any help from any politicians?
So far, we're still exploring that.
Yeah. We are making our calls.
Good. You know, I mean, you would think that politicians would get on board, right?
Yes.
You know, is there a world in which, you know, I have to ask this because we were just talking about Karen Kent and Unite Here, and they had an ordinance passed up in at Northwestern, and I forget what it was. I can't remember the name of it, but basically it was pro-worker. Is there a world in which we say, look, if you want to do business in the city of Chicago and you're a not-for-profit healthcare organization, you know, there's a mechanism by which to recognize a union, you know, or something like that? Like,
we'll vote for that. You run for mayor?
Yeah.
Hold on a second.
Let's take away their tax-free status.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, fair enough. Motion passes. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, there could be a world in which, you know, that there's legislation passed that would prevent a quote-unquote good Samaritan, you know, a not-for-profit hospital that's supposed to be doing the will of the people and taking care of our residents, to say, like, you can't union bust, right? You can't fire people for no reason. And I'm not saying they did, right? But you are. No, kidding. Yeah.
But I think that should go for any tax incentive program.
I think that's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, they passed that in Evanston.
So that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
All right, listen, thank you guys so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. Appreciate the time and everything that you guys are doing to move the ball forward for the working class.
Thank you.
Yeah, kudos
thank
you. To you guys. We'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. That was really interesting.
Yeah,
right?
It was great.
And they are...
good guys.
Here it is. It's not hypothetical anymore. They're live problem right now that we're facing with this esoteric, you know, the labor board is, you know, unconstitutional.
Yeah, so, cutting off all the paths.
Remember that next time you're going to an advocate clinic when you got options.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So, anyway, next week, we're going to be taking calls. And so I know a lot of listeners send us emails and texts.
They're all positive.
Yeah. Well, except for one, but we'll talk about that one day. But, you know, I want to just make sure that everybody knows next week, a week from today, we're going to take calls from listeners. And you guys...
Call and talk to us.
Yeah, call and talk to us. What's the number?
It's 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. 7,200.
Excellent, excellent. And then the following week, so the following Friday, we're actually going to record
a live event at Cafe Bianda
like we normally do, and that's really, really fun. So if you're, you know, if you're in the South Loop, come on down. It's like it's right on like State Street.
Yep.
And like what? 12, 13, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere over there.
Somewhere right in there.
Just we'll give you the address next week. But come on down, have a beer, watch us live. It's really fun.
They have awesome
union
food.
Boss, right?
What's that?
We're going to have one of the police union bosses on?
You say union boss?
Phil did.
Police union boss.
Union boss.
How about union leader, Phil?
Yeah,
leader.
How about that?
Yeah, yes.
I mean, they're all
yes,
boss.
Yes, we are, actually. We're going to have Alex Dunn from ICOPS. So that's going to be really, really cool. But it's a really fun time. So come on down for that. And with that, we got to roll. And we will see you next week, where we'll be taking your phone calls right here on The Workers' Mic 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.